Ahoy, mateys! Welcome to the GameBuoy.org video game podcast, your twice-monthly port of call for gaming news and views that maybe aren't on your radar, but most definitely should be. I'm your host, Captain Spike, and with me, as always, is First Mate Slagkick. Today is July 10th, 2016, and this is episode 115, The King of Swing, celebrating Donkey Kong's 35th birthday. Welcome once again, our lovely and beautiful listeners, to another episode of the GameBuoy.org video game podcast.
GameBuoy.org video game podcast.
As I mentioned, this week we're going to be discussing my favorite donkey and yours, Donkey Kong.
He's not a donkey.
So buckle in and get ready for that. But first, we have our usual slate of follow-ups and news bits. Slaggy, want to get us started?
Yes, Red Dead Redemption finally is available on Xbox One backwards compatibility.
Yes.
So, you know, we had originally heard about there was like a emulation test and it briefly was available on the storefront. But now it's officially official, no matter what version you own.
And, you know, something else that's really exciting, Digital Foundry, the folks over there, what they do basically is take multiple versions of games, particularly that are like multi-platform releases, and will put them side to side and, like, you know, do the same things in both games and, like, track, like, the frame rate and the resolution and everything. Well, they ran their test on Red Dead Redemption and compared it running on a 360 to it running on a Xbox One in backwards compatibility. And what they found is that this game is actually significantly better optimized in backwards compatibility than it is running natively on a real 360. So this is really exciting. You actually will get a better gameplay experience having like a locked, stable 30 frames a second frame rate rather than, you know, that whole like dipping down to 25 or even 20 on the 360 experience.
Yeah,
that is
really
great
cool.
News. The game is available for purchase on the Xbox One store for, I think, $9.99, including all of the DLC with this better performance. That is just a steal. This is a fantastic situation, and this is exactly what I think we were all hoping for when we first got word of backwards compatibility on the Xbox One.
Yeah, and I mean, I'm looking at this screenshot over on Kotaku, and I mean, the Xbox One version even has like clouds in the background that you don't see on the 360 one. So I mean, it's really like, I mean, I can't believe how much better it looks.
We also have word here that Inti Creates announced at Anime Expo 2016 last week that North America will be getting the Azure Striker Gun Vault Striker Pack. This is a physical release of both Azure Striker Gun Vault games that will be releasing courtesy of Yacht Club Games.
Ooh.
So, you know, Yacht Club, they did a lot for 2D platform action-y throwback style games with Shovel Knight, and now we see them bringing some of that love to Azure Striker Gun Vault. I'm stoked about this. I love the first Gun Vault game. I cannot wait for the second one. The pack will be releasing at retail for $29.99 on September 30th, 2016. And I also wanted to briefly mention, they also announced that there will be an anime coming for Azure Striker Gun Vault. So that's going to be launching in the winter of 2016. Please look forward to it.
So Spike Chunsoft and Axis have confirmed, also at Anime Expo 2016, that 2-0 Escape ports are on their way.
Yeah.
999 is confirmed, and also Virtue's Last Reward. We don't know what systems those will be for, but there were teases on Twitter about it probably coming to Steam.
Excellent. That's great. I would love it if 999 would get a port to Vita. I think it's a little silly that Virtue's Last Reward is available on Vita, Zero Time Dilemma is available on Vita, but 999 isn't, so I hope they get around to that. Also, you know, 999 does have an iOS port, even though it's kind of like a downgrade from the 3DS version, or original DS version. They toned down a lot of the game elements, so it's more like an interactive visual novel. But you at least get the whole story, and you know, that's one of the big deals about the Zero Escape series. So we should at some point do a Zero Escape buoy, though. That's a fantastic series.
Buoy Escape.
Excellent. We also have word here that Pokken will be getting a new character available in the Japanese arcade version this month. We'll be getting more details on the major update coming for the game on a live stream on Nico Nico Doga on July 14th, so please look forward to it. The update goes live July 20th.
So Koei Tecmo announced at the Dead or Alive Festival 2016 that VR support is coming to Dead or Alive Extreme 3. This will be happening on October 13th of this year. So, VR jiggles.
Yeah, I look, between this and Summer Lesson, it's clear that there are some people who are very excited about VR for a very specific purpose. I find it a little silly, but you know what? If you're enjoying it and it's not doing anyone any harm, then, you know, just keep on keeping on. In exciting news that I am legit excited for, though, also at Dead or Alive Festival 2016, we got announcement of a new guest character for Dead or Alive 5 Last Round, which, man, Dead or Alive 5 has such long legs. Like, I feel like we've been talking about this game for years now. But the new character that is going to be coming is Mai Shiranui from, you know, obviously most recognized these days from King of Fighters, but really, you know, going back as a Fatal Fury character. So,
oh, wow.
Really exciting stuff. You know, Mai has been a big deal in among the fandom since, gosh, what, like Fatal Fury 2, I think it was, that she popped up in. I know she was popping up certainly in Fatal Fury Special. So just, you know, really cool for those of us longtime SNK Neo Geo fans. We also got confirmation that there are going to be Attack on Titan costumes coming, as well as a new stage based on Attack on Titan. So it'll have, I guess, the Colossal Titan in the background. It's going to be a whole thing. It's pretty exciting stuff, and I hope that we see this content releasing worldwide.
In Blaze Blue Central Fiction news, we have the announcement that S from X-Blaze will be one of the new playable characters.
I'm really excited about this. I love the Blaze Blue games. I have not played X-Blaze, but I know that a lot of people online are really excited about this character, so I'm really hyped for that. We also have word that when 7th Dragon 3 Code VFD releases on 3DS in North America later this month, it will have some DLC available. But what's interesting about this DLC, and all the DLC planned for this game, is that when the DLC initially releases, for the first week, it will be free. All of the DLC pieces after their first week will cost money between, it looks like, $1.50 and $2, but if you could pick the DLC up the week it releases, you get it free. I think that's very cool. I think that's a really great business model. Yeah. I like it a lot more than the traditional, like, day one bonus of, like, oh, you get a code for a free skin in the box that'll never be available for download for other people. I'm not into that. Free DLC for being an early adopter? I think that is a hell of a bonus.
In some other news, if you're on Android and you really want to play Final Fantasy VII, I'm not shaming you, but if you really have been waiting for that day is now, because you can play it on your Android device and go to the Google Play Store and pay $15.99. That's a lot of money.
Excellent, excellent. You know, I'm really excited about that just because I know multiple people in my own life who were upset that they couldn't play Final Fantasy VII on their Android devices legally. Like, you know, there's some really great PS1 emulators on Android, so, you know, I know people go that route sometimes, but as far as, like, official releases, it came out on iOS like a year ago or more, so I'm happy that Android folks can have that experience now too.
Yeah, and it seems to have all of the enhancements, so to speak, of the iOS version.
Excellent, excellent. We also have word here, and this is kind of big news, that Evolve, the 4v1 multiplayer game that launched last year, you may recall we were talking about it a fair amount before it released. Then it released. I had a pre-order in, so I played it day one. I played it for about a week. I never touched it again, and we stopped talking about it here on the show. It wasn't super great. It's actually getting some pretty big changes made to it. The first is that official this week, it is now free to play on PC, which I personally think is a great idea for this game. They have themselves, the co-founders behind Studio Turtle Rock, acknowledged that, you know, they made a lot of mistakes in the design of how this game was going to work. They referred to the way that they presented DLC as quote-unquote a DLC shitstorm that they feel turned off a lot of potential players. So they're basically going to be going, it sounds like, the League of Legends route, where, you know, there are all these different characters and monsters that you can play as, and they'll be on a rotation for free-to-play players. And people who previously played or previously paid to play it will have, like, a premium pass to have, like, full access. So I think that's pretty cool. I think I'm probably going to reinstall Evolve and, you know, see if it's any better now.
Excellent. So Team Fortress 2 is getting a competitive mode update. Very interestingly, shortly after Overwatch just, you know, added the same.
You say very interestingly. I say very obviously.
So, you know, the thing that is kind of almost so controversial about it is that you have to have your Steam account tied to a phone number and have purchased an item, or you can purchase a competitive access pass for $9.99.
And my understanding is that anyone who has paid for Team Fortress 2 before it went free-to-play will also have access to this mode. The idea behind that, you know, you have to have it tied to your phone number or a purchase or what have you, is to try and weed out, like, hackers or, like, scam bots or what have you.
Yeah.
So, you know, they feel like you have to have an authentic account or an account that's been authenticated in order to use this mode. And
that's understandable. I just know some people are like, oh, I don't want to give Valve my phone number. Gaben's going to call me.
Yeah, and that's the thing is I get it, and I get not wanting to share that information, but I also think that it will help a little bit protect the integrity of the game mode for them to do this. So it goes both ways for me.
Yeah, so it'll be interesting to see how this plays out.
Indeed. All right, well, we also have a handful of release date updates for you. The next major Final Fantasy 14 patch, and I suppose this isn't major, but, you know, new content is new content. That's patch 3.35, and it will be releasing on July 19th. We have word here that Dragon Ball Xenoverse 2 will be releasing in North America for PlayStation 4, Xbox One on October 25th, and PC October 28th. It'll be releasing in Europe on PlayStation 4 and Xbox One on October 28th. We also have Resident Evil 4 coming to Xbox One and PlayStation 4 on August 30th. Shin Megami Tensei 4 Apocalypse will be releasing in North America on September 20th. A physical and digital version was also announced for Europe, but does not yet have a release date. And for those of you at home who are, you know, wondering who's going to be bringing that content to Europe, Deep Silver has signed up. You know, you may recall we had talked previously about how there was some licensing kerfuffle over there. Previously, Nipponichi was stepping in to help some of these products make their way overseas. It'll now be handled by Deep Silver, working with Atlus and Sega, so I think that's really cool. And last but certainly not least, we have word that Fallout Shelter will be releasing on PC on July 14th, so please look forward to it. Slaggy, do you have anything else?
Oh my god!
I'll take that as a no.
News. Oh my god, news.
The first piece of news here we have is that Sony's Vice President of Publisher and Developer Relations, Adam Boyes, is leaving PlayStation in order to return to indie game development.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, that's pretty wild. You know, Adam Boyes has been a big personality for PlayStation.
The PlayStation Nation.
He presented at several of, like, the PlayStation events, including their E3 press events sometimes. So this is a big deal, but I am happy to see, you know, that he's going to be returning to game development. I guess he's really passionate about that and wants to go back to it. Interestingly, you know, when he had been questioned on Twitter about what kinds of games he'll be working on, that's where he indicated he'd be going into indie development. A lot of people thought maybe he was going to be heading up a studio at Sony, so.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm sure that his new studio will probably have a partnership with Sony.
I have to assume.
So, Sega has acquired Amplitude Studios, who you probably know from Endless Space and Endless Legend. So, that's an interesting...
Or Dungeon of the Endless.
Yeah. So, there's endless possibilities, you could say, for what Sega can do now. I'm personally hoping for a Sonic the Hedgehog-themed 4X game.
You know, the funny thing is, there's a lot of things I would have predicted would happen to Sega over the years. Becoming the king of, like, strategy game publishing on the PC side worldwide is not one I would have guessed. But, I mean, at this point now, it's basically Firaxis, Paradox, and Sega.
Yeah.
So...
they got Relic and who else?
Creative Assembly. Yeah. And now Amplitude. Who, you know, Amplitude has really made a lot of big changes to the field, including to 4X. You know, with Endless Legend, there are a lot of design philosophies and concepts and systems that even Civilization 6 is going to be cribbing from Endless Legend. So, you know, definitely a real mover and a shaker, and I'm really excited to see, you know, with the assets of Sega, what assets there are at Sega, what they can do with that. So, I'm very excited.
You go, Sega.
We also have word here that the second Ninja Usagimaru game will be released in North America in fall of 2016. It was originally released in Japan last August. This is a really cool 2D, like, platformy puzzle game. It's a lot of fun. It kind of reminds me of a lot of older NES platformer puzzle games, stuff like Solomon's Key, Mighty Bomb Jack, that sort of vintage. I love that kind of game design, and I love seeing it sort of modernized, giving you a little bit more of interactivity with your environment and level design. So, really cool game, I feel. And the original game, Ninja Usagi Maru, The Gem of Blessings, is available in North America on the eShop already if you want to sort of get a sneak peek.
Yeah, I missed out on that, but it looks really cute.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, super cool. D3 Publisher announced a new game that they were teasing last week. It is going to be called Idle Death Game TV.
Oh, my.
It's going to be an adventure game that will have idols battling to the death on a reality show-style Japanese TV show. So that's going to be pretty wild. We don't know a whole lot about the game yet, other than it's going to be published for PlayStation Vita October 20th, 2016. That is not too far away already. A lot of us are expecting it to be an adventure visual novel style game in the veins of like Zero Escape, for example, or Danganronpa. Those kinds of adventure games that have like some action puzzle elements going on.
Cool.
This is one I expect we will talk about more in the future.
So Skullgirls is coming to smartphone, and there will be RPG elements involved. So it'll allow the more, you know, casual platform of mobile gaming to kind of adapt this fighting game.
Yeah, and you know, Slaggy, I'm sorry that you're working with the materials that you are. We had a real weird issue in our show notes just now. If you look at the link for that article that you're reading from, it actually should have a different link than what it took you to. It did that to me too, so, you know, don't trip. Kotaku has a really great write-up on this about how, you know, basically they're creating like a collectible RPG for this mobile game that's going to be a completely different experience from what we've seen on, you know, the console versions and PC releases of Skullgirls. They really kind of want to double down on like the character story backstories and the overall game world story. And they're actually sort of planning on doing like multiple seasons worth of content over time on mobile with this game mode. So definitely a big step for them. It doesn't sound like a big step, but it's actually a pretty big step for them. And I'm really excited. I hope it's very successful for them.
Indeed. And last and certainly not least, we have news that the game from the Senran Kagura producer Kenichiro Takaki-san called Valkyrie Drive Mikuni is coming to the West. This will be published by publisher P-Cube. And for those who don't know about Valkyrie Drive Mikuni, it's described as thus. In the world of Valkyrie Drive, a group of girls has been infected with a mysterious armed virus. When infected, the girls either become X-Stars, who transform into high-powered weapons when sexually aroused, or Liberators, who after triggering a transformation have the power to wield the X-Stars weapon form, the Liberator Arms. Grinding for new and more powerful weapons will never be tedious again. So the listed as the features are when two girls get it on, one girl turns into a super weapon.
Yeah. I don't anticipate we'll be talking about this game a whole lot more after this. This is one of those things. I know there are people who are into this. I know that we have a couple of listeners who are into these kinds of games. I'm happy to tell you about them, but there gets for me to be a point where
the clothing destruction system is back.
Yeah, and you know, that kind of stuff. I love like cloth destruction systems. I'm actually super into that. A little less when it's used
sexualized
for pervy purpose, but I do love like in King of Fighters in the old days, or some of the Fatal Fury games or what have you, or I'm sorry, Art of Fighting is a great example, where you get beat on and your gi starts showing tears and stuff, and I'm a sucker for that kind of stuff. But in this context, I think that's a pass for me.
Power up your weapons by turning on your girlfriends.
Cool!
That sounds pretty controversial, but you know what else is controversial?
Controversial.
Oh my god!
The first piece of news we have that's a little bit controversial is word coming out of Square Enix. When asked by Silicon Era if they plan on releasing Star Ocean Second Evolution for Vita and PS4 in North America, they were basically told that they have no plans. They did indicate, fortunately, that they would like to do so, and as we have seen even just recently with Adventure of Mana releasing on Vita in North America, after all, it would seem, in fact, fact that Square Enix is trying to listen to the fan base and release content that we ask for. I would recommend, if you want to play Star Ocean Second Evolution, which is a port of the PSP port of Star Ocean. Oh man, that's a pretty wild release history. If you want to play this on PS4 and Vita, I would recommend you tweet at Square Enix. Let them know there's a market for this. They do appear to be listening.
Yeah, we have seen that result in names.
Indeed. We also have a pretty wild, controversial situation here involving a Counter-Strike gambling scandal. This is like one of those things where, like, I've read this multiple times and I'm still like, what? Slaggy, do you want to step in here a little bit and explain this?
Yeah, so basically, you know, I don't play Counter-Strike, but my understanding of it is that it basically involves, you know, there's different weapon skins that you can get and sell them on the Steam store. You know, like, you can sell Team Fortress weapons
hats
on the Steam store.
Hats or what have you.
Hats, yeah. But there's these gambling sites that people have set up that let you, like, kind of, like, gamble on them or place bets or in, like, a lottery.
Yeah, I think you can, like, yeah. You're getting there. Never mind.
And so basically, you know, these people are profiting off of getting these, you know, money from people wanting these skins. And, like, it turns out that one of the sites that was responsible for this was run by two major YouTubers.
Yeah, yeah. So some pretty major YouTubers in the CSGO world are related to this. They apparently are running it themselves. It looks like they're, you know, sort of getting some kickback for it. It's all a pretty wild scandal. You know, I'm not involved in this scene at all, but I just found it absolutely fascinating to read about. We're going to link you to an article on it over at GameBuie.org.
GameBuie.org.
Being run on Kotaku. It's pretty interesting stuff. And, you know, I'm really eager to see how it resolves. I know there are lawsuits pending.
Yeah, this is crazy.
In fact, this article might have been better off set as a doom and gloom because it's pretty dark. That having been said, we do got some stuff to talk about. So let's get on it.
Yeah.
Doom and
yeah.
The first one, of course, is that by the time you're hearing this, Splatoon's final Splatfest will nearly be upon you. And that's scary stuff, you know. A lot of people love Splatoon. Splatfests have been a real driving force in the Splatoon fandom for keeping gameplay numbers up. So to see that it's going to be winding down at the end of this month, the final Splatfest goes live Friday, July 22nd, is something I've seen a lot of people kind of concerned about. So please look forward to it. If you're into Splatoon, I would say get in on this last Splatfest where you're picking a side between Callie or Marie, because this is it. Although, if I were a betting man, I would say it's because they're needing the staff to staff up on Splatoon 2,
which I hope
is Splatoon.
Toon, right? Yeah, apparently this is being called the Waifu War.
In related-ish news, we're also hearing of another series with some online services ending. This is currently in Japan only, but as of July 31st, each and every Little Big Planet game will no longer have any online service or functionality in Japan. This is, of course, a big deal because all of the content in Little Big Planet is online content. So this includes Little Big Planet 3, Little Big Planet 2, Little Big Planet, Little Big Planet Karting, Little Big Planet Portable, Little Big Planet Vita. So literally all of the Little Big Planet games are having their online functions taken out. So, you know, that includes browsing and playing stages created by other people, uploading your own stages, playing the game online, doing any of the community stuff. If you're in Japan, it is all coming down July 31st. A lot of people have indicated, you know, that they're now worried that this is going to be coming and happening in North America as well. But as far as we are aware, only Little Big Planet Karting is on the chopping block in North America.
Yeah, and that game was not really well received, was it?
I do not believe so.
Yeah, but I mean, this is just, you know, I mean, like you said, this game thrives on its online content. So, you know, basically, I would start, if you really are passionate about the user content in Little Big Planet, I would start downloading it even.
Well, the problem is that even the stuff you've already downloaded, you won't be able to play anymore once the server, the authentication servers go down. So literally, if you've made stages out there you're proud of, get your Let's Plays of them made now.
Oh, wow.
If you have favorite games that, or favorite stages that you've played on other people's, start playing them again. Start revisiting them, because you may not be able to too much longer, assuming this does happen to the rest of the world. Because again, it is only Japan for now. The Little Big Planet carding servers in North America shut down August 31st, but it will only be Little Big Planet carding shutting down in North America at this time.
All right.
And Saigi, if you want to take this one, I know this was one that you had strong feelings about earlier today.
Yeah, so there is a scam that's infecting World of Warcraft. So those of you who are at least familiar to some degree with World of Warcraft might have known that for like a long time, gold scamming has been like a thing. And recently, within the past year or so, Blizzard actually introduced you can buy game time with a token, and you can also buy the tokens to sell on the auction house. So basically, they've tried to really cut down on gold scammers, but there is a scam going on that involves some malicious code being run that basically kind of hijacks your interface and allows someone on the other end of it to run code and like without even seeing it in the chat window. So basically the way that it works is that a player was saying that he was trying to buy some, you know, epic gear and epic mounts from someone that was like from a really well-known guild. So he was like, oh, okay. And so basically they're like, oh, we have some UI that our guild uses that's custom, and so can you type this into the chat box so that it will let me trade you the items. And then basically it basically like robbed this player, and apparently like it ends up like infecting, like, so that you start whispering, or like someone else starts whispering, you know. So
wow.
So like I could pop on and say, oh, hey, Captain Spike, I'm testing this new add-on or whatever. Can you type in this run script? It would come, like, from my character.
Wow, that's wild.
Yeah, I didn't realize that there was, like, such a, you know, security vulnerability, like, this far on in WoW.
That's crazy. This is so unpleasant. I really, really, really hope that Blizzard gets this taken care of, like, ASAP, because this needs to definitely not continue.
Yeah.
Especially with Legion coming. We're going to have a lot of people returning. There will be new people coming. So, you know, I definitely hope that they get this nailed down. As an aside, how excited are you for Legion in a month and a half?
I am. Oh, looking in the comments, apparently someone in the comments went to, like, the original Reddit thread and has a little more to say. Apparently they were trying to, this person on Reddit was trying to buy like a carry to get through heroic or mythic Hellfire Citadel raid. And so like sometimes like with certain raids they're like, oh, we need you to get these UI add-ons and stuff.
Interesting. That is, yeah, that is
so it was a little bit more like, oh, this person was just careless. So yeah, that's interesting. I don't know if it's you know, I mean, I'm sure that there's been people targeted for all sorts of things, but yeah, just basically be careful out there, and you know, don't type in any suspicious code, only download add-ons from sites that you trust. But yeah, scary. Excellent.
Yeah. All right, well, let's move on to some brighter news. We have a couple of smash hits here for you guys. The first one is a really great piece over on Polygon titled StarCraft Ghost: what went wrong. You know, I'm a big
everything
fan.
No,
I'm a big fan of StarCraft Ghost. I was very fortunate enough to get to play it at E3 back in the early 2000s now. I really enjoyed it. I thought they could have released the game that they had playable on the showroom floor, even as at least like a download game, and I think it would have been successful. It was fun. So to read this whole you know, essay length piece on the history of the development and sort of what happened was for me a real eye-opener as far as what I didn't see in that playable demo. So definitely an article I would recommend. We will link you to it over on GameBuoy.org.
GameBuoy.org. And yeah, you know, when Polygon knocks it out of the park, they knock it out of the park.
I agree. I sometimes have some issues with them, but when they get it right, they get it very right.
Exactly.
We also have here a somewhat controversial piece. This is about Pokemon Go. It is written by a person of color. It's published over on Kotaku. And this article is titled, Pokemon Go Could Be a Death Sentence for a Black Man. And this is a person of color talking about how, you know, playing AR games, games where you're encouraged to sort of meander about in places maybe you're not typically meandering about and being seen, you know, how this can have consequences for people of color that a lot of, you know, white people maybe aren't aware of. And, you know, I've seen people across the gamut, friends of mine, people I know on Twitter and social media, what have you, people of color, some of whom are saying, you know, this tracks their own fears, some saying this isn't their experience, but they can understand it. And some people think who feel that it's just an exaggeration. I think, of course, everybody's view is going to be their own. All of our life experiences are going to inform what we say. To me, when I see a person of color write an article like this, I feel like I have to sit up and pay attention, because I would never have even thought of some of these things. But I was at a party last night. We were all playing Pokemon Go. Literally, people I've known 15 plus years who I've never seen play a video game playing Pokemon Go. We're all talking about going on a Pokewalk. And there were two ladies of color who actually, when I asked them if they wanted to go on a Pokewalk, they did indicate that they wouldn't really feel comfortable going out at that time for a walk. And to me, you know, we're in a super suburb area, not quite affluent, but not dangerous neighborhood. And I really thought back to this article, like, my experiences are not the same as others. And it's really, to me, valuable to read about these experiences and be a little more empathetic to these ideas and make consideration of that sort of thing.
Indeed.
So that's what we're going to link you to over on GameBuoy.org.
GameBuoy.org.
All right. Well, with all of this having been said, it's time to start up our discussion. We're going to be talking about Donkey Kong, and, you know, we're going to do this a little differently. We're going to talk primarily about the games here, as we usually do. But first, Slaggy, I'd like to hear from you. What are your feelings on Donkey Kong generally before we start talking about the history of Donkey Kong?
You know, I mean, I know that people are like, oh, Donkey Kong, oh, he's classic. But I think something that... until you really like kind of look a little deeper and look at Donkey Kong over the years, Donkey Kong has really been a place not only where Nintendo has typically seen huge success and like revitalize their markets, but also there's been a lot of experimentation with the Donkey Kong series. And, you know, I mean, you could probably think like, oh yeah, Donkey Kong Country was something new, but I mean, even like, you know, like, when you really look at the Donkey Kong series as a whole, I feel like they, like, sometimes take some risks with Donkey Kong, and it usually pays off.
Oh, I would absolutely agree with that. You know, we have them collaborating with Namco Bandai for Donkey Konga, and then they took the Donkey Konga controller peripheral, the bongos, to make a side-scrolling, timing-based platform game that's, like, one of the tightest platforming experiences I've ever played. There's a lot of experimentation with Donkey Kong. You know, they did the Diddy Kong Racing, which is certainly relevant to this conversation, where, you know, they could have just made like a Mario Kart clone, but they experimented with like entirely different like vehicle schemes and control schemes, so that you weren't just a kart, you also had like your plane and your hovercraft.
Yeah.
And it ended up being, you know, a more experimental experience than Donkey Kong or Mario Kart, but I would also say a better experience than Mario Kart in that era. I absolutely think Diddy Kong Racing is a better racing game than Mario Kart 64.
Yeah, and you know, we
certainly one couldn't happen without the other, let's be clear. So I'm not saying like, oh fuck Mario Kart 64 or whatever.
Right.
Just that, you know, they took Mario Kart 64 from a design perspective and iterated and experimented, and for me came up with something that was like even better, like next level from that.
Right. And
we see those elements popping up in Mario Kart now.
Yeah, and I mean, the thing is that, you know, we spent a whole month talking about Mario last year for his 30th of Super Mario Brothers, but I mean, really, without Donkey Kong, there would be no Mario. Like, I mean, it's not just, that's not an exaggeration.
Oh, absolutely, and on so many levels. And, you know, that sort of takes us in a little bit on where Donkey Kong came from. And Slaggy, if you would like to describe a little bit sort of about the early steps of Donkey Kong, sort of from the background history point.
Yeah, I always love the history of this, just because it's so you know, it was so possible that Donkey Kong could have never been, and like the landscape of gaming could have been like totally different, like, you know, could have not even existed really, but
yeah.
So basically, you know, we talked a little bit about Nintendo during our 1990s and their history and kind of breaking into the arcade scene. You might remember we talked about Radarscope, which was not really successful. And that was in like late 1980, like right at the beginning of the decade. And so they had a bunch of these Radarscope machines that were unsold. And so Yamauchi-san, Hiroshi Yamauchi, you know, president at the time, said, oh, why don't we convert the cabinets into something new. And so that's where Shigeru Miyamoto-san came in, who had just only been there for a couple years. And so Miyamoto's like, oh yeah, I'll come up with something. And so Miyamoto and Gunpei Yokoi, you know, father of the Game Boy, kind of worked together to collaborate. They originally started with making a game based on Popeye. So originally it was going to be, you know, Popeye was going to save olive oil from Bluto, you know, and it was going to be kind of a little, you know, little arcaded game based on that, but they weren't able to obtain the licensing. So Miyamoto kind of took the, you know, characters and took Popeye and replaced him with a carpenter named Jumpman. There was a girl who replaced olive oil named Lady at the time. And then instead of Bluto, there was a gorilla who was the pet of the carpenter. And so it ended up kind of taking some influence from King Kong, of course, and
even Beauty and the
Beast. Beauty and the Beast. And so it was kind of, you know, turned into this, you know, what ended up being this really successful platformer. And of course, this ended up being Donkey Kong. And you know, the original story is that, oh, it was meant to be Monkey Kong, but they like translated it wrong. Or, you know, they, you know, because we have like things with Pac-Man and Puck-Man, which, you know, we all know the story about Puck-Man, I think, but they didn't want it to be vandalized to Fuck-Man. But the story that I've heard most often repeated is that, he wanted, Miyamoto-san wanted something to translate, to be kind of like stubborn gorilla. And so donkey was a synonym in his thesaurus that was meant as like stubborn, and Kong was gorilla. So Donkey Kong, kind of like a silly, stubborn gorilla. And so this ended up, you know, being really positive for Nintendo. Of course, we know that Jumpman was later renamed to Mario, and Lady was renamed to Pauline. So, you know, that's where our little guy got his start. But he was kind of, Mario was kind of a dick because, well, he was. You know, and you know, of course, here, people who are, like, you know, pretty into the Mario lore know that he started out as a carpenter and they changed it to a plumber for the setting of the Mario Brothers series.
Pretty into the Mario lore. Well,
I'm saying that, you know, maybe soccer moms who are like, oh, Mario, wouldn't know that he started as a carpenter or even that he's a plumber. But, you know, I think more people than not who are, like, a little more into Mario. But anyway, Mario
was kind of... I also do want to sidebar briefly. Sidekick mentioned, you know, that they took the design that they had in place for a Popeye game and then noted that they were not able to get the Popeye license. That is true. However, a couple of years later, they did get the Popeye license for a series of Game & Watch games.
Yeah.
As well as an arcade game. So I know a few people who have, like, argued with me. I've even been on the wrong side of this at one point in my life that, like, oh, that didn't happen. They got the Popeye license. I've played that game. That is a different Popeye arcade game.
Yeah.
Not the game that started its life as Donkey Kong.
Or that the Donkey Kong.
Or that ended its life as Donkey Kong.
Ended its life. That sounds sort of, and I love how I'm talking about, like, Mario's kind of a dick when we should be talking about, you know, the way this game plays. I mean, you know, at the time, and the reason that they had Radarscope and they tried to, you know, use that to really break into particularly the North American arcade market is that, you know, things like Space Invaders were, like, really popular, but Radarscope just was not on anyone's radar, and probably most definitely should not have been. But, you know, this really was really creative in a lot of ways with, you know, like, the way that it was using platforming. I mean, it really, even though we might not think of it as much as a platforming game, you know, in the terms of, like, a character platformer, it really, like, set the stage for, you know, that sort of thing. And, you know, the idea of, like, jumping over the barrels, using the ladders, and, you know, just the different elements that you have on the different stages. I mean, it really resonated with people. And the fact that I believe it was one of the first... simple story though it may be, it was one of the first arcade games to have a little story element, you know, and so people really responded to it.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, it's funny because at the time, having, like, multiple different stages that were very different with different mechanics. So, you know, platforms were sometimes moving platforms, sometimes platforms with fire on them. Some levels have barrels rolling at you, ladders or what have you. Basically, the four-man programming team working on the original Donkey Kong actually complained about Miyamoto's design concepts because they felt that he was basically asking them to create multiple games for this single game. So it's really interesting to think back, like, as Saggy was saying, you know, this in a lot of ways is sort of a fundamental platform game as far as what platform games ended up being. And so to look back now with what we know about platform games, and you expect multiple stages and multiple settings and new challenges in every stage, it's funny to think that at the time that was like something you would complain to your boss about being asked to make.
Indeed. So, and it has a really interesting localization story. So, you know, you might, if you know a little bit about Nintendo history, early history, the name Howard Lincoln might ring a bell. He was the lawyer at the time. And so he wasn't really sure that he's like, Donkey Kong? What's a Donkey Kong? So, you know, and they even wanted the name to be changed from Donkey Kong. But Yamauchi was like, nope. And so basically, what happened is, you know, they ended up when they were localizing, and you know, that's where Pauline and Mario came in. Mario was the landlord of the original NOA offices, and he was apparently kind of like a real stickler, and so they're like, oh, we're gonna name him after this kind of guy who treats his gorilla and like a dick and puts him in a cage. And, you know, Jumpman, you know, originally was chosen because of Walkman, Pac-Man, and so, you know, Mario ended up probably being a good choice. And so what happened is that there were two individuals in the distribution department, Ron Judy and Al Stone. And so they, up in Seattle, where NOA is still today, they approached two bar owners. They're like, hey, we have this new machine. We'd like to test it out, kind of, you know, like a focus test. And so basically, the managers were like, okay. They were a little reluctant, but then it did so well. It was making like $30 a day, which, you know, that was in 1981, so it's not bad. So it was like consistently performing well. And so basically, they're like, oh, we want more of these. You know, people are just, you know, loving this game. And so, you know, basically they rushed to try to start converting Radar Scope machines to Donkey Kong machines. And then in July of 1981, 35 years ago, the game officially went on sale, and it was huge. You know, it was a sensation. It did very, very well.
Excellent. You know, and it would be silly for me, of course, to go over like the entire release dates of all the
every port. It got a lot of ports.
But
it did get a forced an NES port, which, you know.
So it was ported, you know, to the arcade. It was ported to Intellivision. It had a Game and Watch release.
Like ColecoVision, right? Yeah, ColecoVision. Like,
those are typically two separate releases. One was in March. One was in December.
Yeah, ColecoVision typically had really good ports.
I would agree with that statement. It did get a port to the Atari 2600. I think a lot of you all probably played that if you were gaming in the early 80s.
That was a bad port from what I remember.
same. It did get a port to the Atari 8-bit computers, obviously Famicom NES, to the unofficial port to the TI-99. Obviously, IBM PCs got a port. There was a Commodore 64 port, MSX port, a port for the ZX Spectrum, the Amstrad CPC, Famicom Disk System got a special version, Atari 7800 got a port. There was a port for the Game Boy Advance that was sold both at reader and as well at retail, as well as on e-reader cards, available on the Wii Virtual Console, available on the Virtual Console in a special original edition in Europe, got a 3DS release on the Virtual Console worldwide, as well as the original version also being released as a purchase on the 3DS Virtual Console, and it's available on the Wii U Virtual Console.
Yeah, so you can play it. If you have not played it in some form, you can very easily play it. And I mean, it's a little tricky, you know. I mean, it's not like the easiest game to just like, oh, I'm just having fun. You know, it gets pretty challenging. But, I mean, it's classic. And, you know, even if you don't, even if it's not typically your style of game, I mean, to appreciate what it started, you know. I mean, I really feel that if Donkey Kong hadn't been the success that it was, you know, we wouldn't have we arguably wouldn't have had Mario, even though Jumpman was meant to be kind of like, oh, he could be in any game. Like, you know, I think the things would have turned out very differently.
Absolutely. So, you know, I want to start talking then about Donkey Kong Jr. Donkey Kong Jr., of course, is the second Donkey Kong game. It first appeared in the arcades and, you know, over the course of the 80s was released for pretty much every platform around at the time. You know, once again, we're talking about the NES and Famicom, Atari 2600, 7800, 8-bit computer, ColecoVision, ColecoAtom, Intellivision, BBC Micro, Game & Watch. And there were later ports for the, or not even ports, but like the Game Boy Advance e-reader got one. The Virtual Console for Wii got it released. The NES version was a playable game in the GameCube version of Animal Crossing. It was available on 3DS in the eShop as a Virtual Console game. So this is another one that, again, released basically everywhere. The conceit of the game is that you're basically trying to rescue Donkey Kong while playing as Donkey Kong Jr.
Yeah.
Your father has been kidnapped by Mario.
So I totally had flipped it around, like, you know, but I feel like in the original Donkey Kong that Mario had been kind of mistreating Donkey Kong, so Mario
used
to be.
Well, with the story of Donkey Kong being like a pet that, you know, went a little crazy, yeah, I think it tracks, but.
Yeah, but yeah, this is the one where it was straight up in a cage.
Yeah, and it's interesting because
this
is pretty much the only Nintendo game where Mario is unequivocally the antagonist.
Yeah, and my thing that I really like about Donkey Kong Jr. is that they very easily could have just made Donkey Kong 2 and just made more levels and done the same exact thing. But, you know, I mean, knowing how Miyamoto is, like how we know him now, I mean, I'm not surprised that they chose to, you know, really try something completely different, and I think that it really stands out for that reason, you know. I mean, even something like Miss Pac-Man, which, you know, is basically more Pac-Man, but, you know, they chose to, you know, have Donkey Kong Jr. be playable. This one involves, like, you know, climbing
vines
and
stuff. The
ropes
and stuff, yeah.
And the ropes, and so, I mean, I really appreciate that. And, you know, it's kind of funny to think that it really makes Super Mario Brothers 2, aka Lost Levels, like, kind of like the black sheep, because, like, usually you really see, like, you know, Miyamoto, like, let's do something different for the sequel, you know? So,
yeah.
Just
yeah,
side
absolutely.
Note. Side note.
And, you know, I don't have a whole lot to say about Donkey Kong Jr. other than what we've just said. Do you?
Not really.
Okay, well, then I would like to talk a little bit about Donkey Kong 3.
Oh, the much maligned Donkey Kong 3.
That's true. So Donkey Kong 3 was a little bit of a weird situation. It is was actually released on the NES and Famicom at basically the same time as it was released in the arcade. I have never actually played Donkey Kong 3 in an arcade. The only time I've played the arcade version has been via emulator. It released originally in the arcade in October of 83. So, you know, that was at least pretty cool. By, you know, these terms, it released like 7 months later on Famicom, which, you know, was not super common at the time. So also released ports on the FM7, PC88, Game Boy Advance via e-reader, Virtual Console for Wii, 3DS, and Wii U. So you can definitely play this game. This is a fairly different game from the other other Donkey Kong games.
It's basically a space shooter.
Well, it is basically a space shooter. You play as Stanley, and you're sort of running around
Stanley the Bugman.
The bottom of the screen as little Stanley, almost in a Space Invaders style way. The threat is coming down from above, except the threat in this case is Donkey Kong hanging from some vines at the center of the screen. And basically what you have to do as Stanley the Exterminator is climb up some platforms in order to jump up at them and fire bug spray at both Donkey Kong as well as at a bunch of insects that are flying around the level.
He's like smacking into beehives and like basically wreaking havoc in your greenhouse.
Yeah, exactly. It's pretty weird to me. There are only three levels, which, you know, they repeat in the same sequence moving forward. So to me, it's a little bit less interesting than the other Donkey Kong games, but I still like it. I still think it's cool. It had a really interesting Game & Watch release, which is actually like a multiplayer version of the game with kind of different play options, where one player can play as Stanley, one can play as Donkey Kong, and you duel against each other by like spraying bees in order to make them fly at your enemy. It's pretty weird. And there is a version of that game included in Game & Watch Gallery 4 for GBA, in case you're eager to try and play it.
Oh, apparently it's got Mario and a Boo and a fireball.
It's really in that version, yeah. They did make that change, but it's still fundamentally the same gameplay.
That's super cute.
Donkey Kong 3, to me, I enjoy playing it, but that's about all I've got. What about you, Sly?
Well, I mean, it was notably, I believe, the first game that Hip Tanaka worked on, and you know, I mean if you're an Earthbound fan, you know who he is. So I believe that it was his very first game that he composed music for.
All right, well then, before we start getting to the wilder world of Donkey Kong, let's talk about a really neat remake of the original. This was released in 1994 for the Game Boy. This is Donkey Kong. It is often referred to in the fandom as Donkey Kong 94. This was actually the first Game Boy game designed to have enhanced features when played on the Super Game Boy. Super Game Boy, for those of you who aren't familiar, was a cartridge for the Super Nintendo that had a cart slot for Game Boy games, effectively allowing you to play Game Boy games on your TV on your Super Nintendo.
Yeah, like the GBA reader for GameCube that later followed?
Yeah, a very similar concept, except I don't think Game Boy Player actually had any like software enhancements.
Yeah.
Whereas with the Super Game Boy, you'd have cool stuff like some single-player games would actually let you play two-player games on the same screen if being played on Super Game Boy. Killer Instinct was a good example of that. I believe Wario Blast had that functionality as well. I had Wario Blast, but I didn't often have friends over to play two-player games at that point, so I don't know. You know, it's very interesting, though, because you would also see extra, like, animations in some games, expanded color palette, full, you know, not full color, but actual use of color in games. And in the case of Donkey Kong, you actually had like levels and stuff that were only open on the Super Game Boy that were not there if you're playing on a normal Game Boy. Something else really cool is that Super Game Boy games had a border imposed on the screen, and the Donkey Kong 94 games border was actually the cabinet art from the original Donkey Kong release,
really,
which
cute.
I think is really cool. Yeah, it's super cute. So, you know, Donkey Kong 94, something that was really cool about it, it basically starts off as like the original arcade game. You play those first four stages, and then like a story starts happening, and Donkey Kong comes back and grabs Pauline again, and you know, the game world sort of opens up almost like Mario World style, and you end up having an additional 97 stages spanning 9 worlds to fight through. And something really cool about this is, you know, I know that this is Donkey Kong Buoy and not Mario Buoy, but I think we mentioned in Mario Buoy a lot of the Mario abilities that were sort of popularized in Mario 64 actually originated here. Stuff like the backflip, which lets you have like a slightly higher jump than normal, that actually originated in Donkey Kong 94 and is, you know, absolutely integral to completing some of the extra stages in Donkey Kong 94. So it's to me an absolutely phenomenal game, available on original Game Boy and 3DS Virtual Console, fortunately. This game series of the Donkey Kong 94 sort of line continues on into the Mario versus Donkey Kong series, and we will talk about that briefly moving forward. But Saigi, do you have any thoughts on Donkey Kong 94?
I'm really just that as someone who loved Super Mario Brothers 2, there's a lot of similarities too. You can like pick up keys and stuff, you know, so like you can actually like pick things up. So that it was just really, you know, I remember having a lot of fond memories of it. It was one of my favorite Game Boy games.
Excellent. Yeah, it's a favorite of mine, and I highly recommend people check it out if they haven't played it already. So let's talk then. Let's now go to the place that I think most people probably are excited for us to go to. And Saigi, if you want to give us the sort of backstory here, I think
the DK lore.
Well, I'm talking more about history, but if you do want to talk about in-game lore, you are sort of the Game Boy lore guy. Set up Donkey Donkey Kong Country.
So, you know, until we had Donkey Kong 94, there was kind of an absence of Donkey Kong since Donkey Kong 3. So, this was really the first time, aside from Donkey Kong 94, that Donkey Kong reappeared. And so, what happened is that... you know, Nintendo, and we talked a little bit about this on our episode about Rare. You know, the Stamper Brothers were working with Silicon Graphics workstations and, you know, at the time really breaking ground with what they were able to do visually. Their sprites were, like, at the time considered very realistic 3D sprites. And so that's when Nintendo had acquired Rare. And so they, you know, ended up starting to work together. And so this was the first game that Miyamoto-san was not involved with. And, you know, so, I mean, it's definitely, even though we continue to see its influence to this day with, you know, the Country series, Retro does it now. And so funny, if still a Western kind of developed series to this day, but, you know, very different game. In fact, it's called Super Donkey Kong in Japan, which I actually didn't realize that until researching for this episode. And it's funny because, you know, you think of Mario and Super Mario, where Super Mario really took it to, like, you know, the platforming as we know it. And that's what Donkey Kong Country did. So, and, you know, as far as the lore goes, the Donkey Kong in Donkey Kong Country is the grandson of the original Donkey Kong, who is, who we would later find out is Cranky Kong, right? Cranky
I Kong. Believe that's correct. Yeah.
So, this, of course, introduced many people's favorite Diddy Kong. I'm pretty fond of Diddy. I think he's pretty cool. And, you know, so basically some of the things that were really, you know, fondly remembered, aside from the, you know, the at the time groundbreaking graphics, you know, I mean, this was really, I mean, it's easy to look back and be like, oh, it looks so outdated. But for 1994, this was like unprecedented, really. You know, so it's a side-scrolling platformer. There's different things, like you have to like swim in some levels. There were the barrel cannons, which you see even like in the Smash stages.
Rideable animal friends.
Yeah, and of course the animal friends. So, you know, that can help you, you know, navigate through different things, which I almost feel like is very similar in the way that Kirby used Animal Friends, too. There was also, you know, multiplayer modes. So, I'm finding it hard to really elaborate more because, I mean, it was just, I feel like this is a game that, at least in our time, everybody played. And, you know,
yeah.
I remember I didn't own it right away, but one of my good friends at the time, he had it, and we just, like, you know, because I was like 10 or whatever, so he's like, oh, come have a sleepover and like we'll play Donkey Kong Country. I was just like, I just remember being, you know, even though I would have to honestly say, in my opinion, I would definitely prefer Mario platformers over Donkey Kong Country. And even at the time, you know, I was definitely, you know, more into Sonic as well. I mean, I cannot deny that, you know, it was very groundbreaking. It helped revitalize Donkey Kong as, you know, a pillar of the Mario, kind of the Mario universe. And I would say, you know, thanks to its success that it allowed, you know, him to be kind of like, you know, a character that we see in the kart games and stuff, instead of just being like, oh, yeah, that obscure game from arcades back in the 80s.
That having been said, I have to be honest, I'm not a big fan of any of the Donkey Kong Country game, the original Donkey Kong Country games. Of the three, I think the second has the most inspired level design, but by and large, I'm not really a fan.
Yeah. I mean, of course, David Wise, really, you know, really famous music. And the music was great. I have to say.
Oh, absolutely. And some of the best music in all of the Super Nintendo era, frankly.
Yeah, and it's interesting that he really was inspired. He said that he really took influence, among other things, from Koji Kondo. So he really was trying to be mindful and make it a, you know, a very Nintendo score. But, you know, this is very... It was a huge success. It was the second best-selling SNES game. And basically, you know, this was a little bit later in the lifespan of the SNES. We were only about 2 years away at that point from N64, but with the... you know, with the sequels, Donkey Kong Country 2, Diddy's Conquest, and Donkey Kong Country 3, Dixie Kong's Double Trouble. You know, these really helped the SNES stay competitive because all three of these, you know, I mean, I have to admit, you know, these days I kind of blend the three together because, you know, They feel like gameplay wise, they all pretty much did some more things. But yeah. You know, they were all very well received at the time, and with the PlayStation and the Saturn, you know, helped keep the SNES sales record high.
Yeah, absolutely.
And again, you had mentioned Diddy Kong Racing, which, you know, was for N64, of course, but I mean, Diddy was really popular, and so, you know, these games, you know, even though if maybe for Captain Spike and I aren't our absolute favorites, you know, definitely undeniable that they were a huge part of not only the Donkey Kong series success, but also the SNES success, so.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I do want to note, these games were released originally on the Super Nintendo. They did get ports to the original Game Boy and the Game Boy Advance.
Yeah, Donkey Kong Land, which is, I mean, you... When you look at the Donkey Kong Land games, I mean, it's obviously it's Game Boy, but I mean, even with the Game Boy, like, you know, they really tried to push the limits. So, I mean, you have to really appreciate what Rare did, even though, you know, we might look at Rare now and be like, oh. But, you know, at the time, like, they really were pushing the limits visually, and, you know, I would say I've played a lot worse platform games. Bubsy.
Yeah, and, you know, something really interesting is, and I wasn't even tripping on the Donkey Kong Land, Donkey Kong Country thing, because there were also Game Boy Color remakes of Donkey Kong Country for Game Boy Color, which, you know, Donkey Kong Land features different level designs and what have you. So it's a pretty wild setup all around, really, these Donkey Kong Country, this Donkey Kong Country re-release and port situation. So it's pretty wild. These are also available on Virtual Console, which was kind of a big deal, actually. But back in March, also released on Virtual Console for the new 3DS, since new 3DS has Super Nintendo support. So definitely, you know, really exciting stuff there. I don't have a whole lot to say about the original Donkey Kong Country games. When we start talking about returns, I will. But we need to start hurrying up this conversation.
I think the thing that I'd like to point out about Donkey Kong Country 3 is that it featured, you know, it also had Kitty Kong, who, like, we're not going to talk about him, but it featured Dixie as the main character. So I thought that was pretty cool that, you know, they let the, you know, female character, the female Kong Kid have her time in the spotlight. And it, I mean, the thing that's really interesting is that all three of these games, you know, it wasn't just like, oh, they kind of got, you know, more repetitive. Like, all three of them were really well reviewed. Like, people really liked all three of them.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, all right, let's talk about 64 and then Diddy Kong Quest. Diddy Kong Racing. So Donkey Kong 64 was obviously a Nintendo 64 game. It was a big deal because it was the first game on the Nintendo 64 to require the expansion pack.
I thought you were going to say that it had the yellow cartridge.
Oh, the funny thing is that the primary use of the expansion pack is just that, you know, there was actually a game-breaking bug internally when they were trying to use the game without it. So, you know, that's something very interesting. It had a unlockable version of Rare's game Jetpack on the cartridge as well, hidden.
That's cute.
So that was cool. You know, and it's funny because the Virtual Console releases of the game, even though Rare and Jetpack are now Microsoft properties, the Virtual Console re-releases of Donkey Kong 64 have retained that unlockable copy of Jetpack, as well as all references to Rare, which, you know, sometimes in Virtual Console releases we do see references changed. So, you know, that's very interesting. So, this game takes a lot of cues from Mario 64 and Banjo-Kazooie.
Yeah.
Banjo-Kazooie, of course, having also been by Rare, so that's not a huge surprise. Mm-hmm.
Very collectathon sort of.
Yeah, that's actually what it's, I think, most well known for, is that, you know, some stages have, you know, multiple hundreds of items to collect within them, which is a pretty big deal, actually. When you think back to even Banjo-Kazooie, which was often looked at as a collectathon for having a couple hundred items per stage, that Donkey Kong takes that to, like, another level is wild.
Yeah.
But it's, you know, it's a very competent 3D platformer of that era.
I like it better than the Country games, quite honestly.
You know, I don't like it more than the Country Returns games, but I like it more than those core three Donkey Kong Country games. Absolutely.
This is, of course, the origin of the famous DK rap, which was meant to be cheesy if you were worried about it being sincere, especially you younger folk who, you know, the 90s did have a lot of embarrassing things, but it was meant to be as cheesy as it is.
Indeed. And it is good.
Did you know that his coconut gun spires and spurs.
I did not know that.
Apparently that's a meme.
I know. No, I know it is. I'm just, oh my goodness. So, yeah, Donkey Kong 64, cool game, collect-a-thon. Somewhat interesting level design from time to time. Also, kind of suffers from, like, really big stage with not a lot going on everywhere sometimes.
Yeah.
Overall, I think it's worth playing. It is on Virtual Console on Wii U. So if you have a Wii U and you've never played it and you'd like to, that is your pretty much only option.
You can play as the six members of the DK crew. And, I mean, the only other thing is that apparently, I didn't really like pay too much attention at the time, but Cranky Kong refers to Donkey Kong as his son, but no, he is grandson. Like, that is official as far as Nintendo goes.
All right. We also have here Diddy Kong Racing. This is another Nintendo 64 game. It was released November 1997. As far as I know, it has never gotten a Virtual Console release, but it did get an enhanced remake for the DS called Diddy Kong Racing DS. We talked a little bit earlier about what makes this game special. You know, it has like a hub world where you basically have like challenges out in the hub world and you have to find like the individual racetracks to go to. It had like a whole story mode involving like an intergalactic pig wizard named Whiz Pig. It was a pretty wild game. I love it though. I think it's really
Conker
a
appeared
game.
Was that, it might have been Conker's first appearance.
You know, Conker appeared in it. Banjo appeared in it from Banjo Kazooie. I remember because he had that voice clip, you'd pick him, he'd go, "I'm Banjo."
That he did.
So, really cool game. I'm a big fan. I've already talked about being a fan of this game, though. Psyche, what about you?
I mean, even though, for me, Mario Kart 64 was where it at, I really appreciated, just for a change of pace, you know, it was a very competent kart racer, and, you know, it's very easy to have very bad kart racers. I feel like we talked about that on our Mario Kart episode, that there's, you know, there are good kart racers, and there are bad kart racers, and Diddy Kong Racing was good. It was very competent, and, you know, I really appreciated that, you know. You think of something like Sonic All-Stars Racing Transformed. I mean, that's like basically owes everything to Diddy Kong Racing.
Yeah, right? I mean, Diddy Kong Racing, you don't change your vehicle mid-race, so you select what vehicle you're going to use, and each track would actually have like different routes for each vehicle. So if you're doing like the airplane, you might have a completely different experience than someone who's using hovercraft or kart. So it's really cool the way that all of these track designs were so like multi-tiered, multifaceted, and just, I thought, really cool.
And again, you're seeing experimentation that was not being done with Mario Kart at the time.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Soundtrack for the game was composed by David Wise. It had some phenomenal compositions. I'm a big fan. And I think that this game, I actually like it way more than I do Mario Kart 64, which at the time used to be like a very controversial opinion, but I think people have come around since then.
Yeah.
So, you know, interestingly, we continue to this day. This game was so well loved that to this day we get rumors all the time about a Diddy Kong Racing 2. And let me just say, I will be the first in line if that ever happens.
Diddy Kong Racing 2 NX. Let's bring it.
Let's see. So we're going to talk about all of the Mario versus Donkey Kong games a little separately. We'll talk about them at the end. I next want to talk about the GameCube Donkey Kong games, and that is primarily...
We're not even going to waste our time on Barrel Blast.
Well, Barrel Blast is a Wii game. Why would we skip forward to the Wii era?
Oh, I thought because we were going to talk just about all the racing games.
No. although, interestingly, you know, by talking about Barrel Blast in this time, Barrel Blast was originally going to be a GameCube game. It was moved to the Wii, as they sort of started porting over their projects to the Wii. It was originally meant to be a Donkey Kong Bongo game. So,
perfect segue.
It actually does belong a little bit in this conversation, but we need to start with, of course, Donkey Konga. And, you know, earlier I referenced Donkey Konga as collaboration between Nintendo and Namco Bandai. I must correct myself slightly that Namco was just Namco at the time. The Bandai merger hadn't happened yet. Donkey Konga was developed by the same team that made the Taiko no Tatsujin series, Taiko Drum Master. For the various worldwide releases, they did license music specific to each region, which was really cool. I have all three of the Japanese releases of Donkey Konga. There's some really cool music, stuff like Utada Hikaru present in the game and stuff, which is really neat. I'm a big fan, though. You know, the gameplay is almost identical to Taikyo no Tetsujin, except, you know, rather than having, you know, your middle drum and your drum rim hits, you have a left drum and right drum. And, you know, but otherwise it's identical down to, like, hit one drum repeatedly, hit both drums repeatedly, hit both drums at the same time. It's like the exact same cues.
And then there's the microphone built in so you could clap.
Oh, yeah, yeah, which is also a really neat little touch. You have to, it has a little mic and you clap in order to do
something. I like how you actually just clapped.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's the best way to example it. I don't know the correct way to say that.
Demonstrate.
Thank you, my friend. So, look, okay, I was at a party playing Pokemon Go until like 3 a.m. last night.
I know.
Calm down. So, basically, though, Donkey Konga, really cool game, released for the GameCube, and unfortunately, only the GameCube, as far as I'm aware. This is, to me, a game that could still make a comeback someday. I think the gameplay is still relevant because music is still relevant. Then again, I suppose maybe music games aren't. So, either way, released in 2003, 2004, and had versions releasing worldwide up until 2005. So, I'm a big fan. I highly recommend you check them out. Fun little
games.
A lot
of fun.
But to me, the biggest reason to have a set of the Donkey Kong bongos is really Donkey Kong Jungle Beat. And this is a game developed by Nintendo EAD Tokyo. You know, they're probably the people you're most familiar with, this specific team working on stuff like Super Mario Galaxy, Ocarina of Time 3D, Four Swords Anniversary Edition, Majora's Mask 3D. So, you know, definitely some really interesting stuff coming out of those guys. And Donkey Kong Jungle Beat is basically a rhythm-based, like momentum-based, side-scrolling platformer. You basically get some cues and have to, you know, hit the bongos with the right timing in order to make DK platform correctly. Hitting the left drum makes him move left, hitting the right drum makes him move right, hitting both at the same time causes him to jump, clapping makes him clap, which has like you know, some attack purposes sometimes it just will like be stage interaction. It's an absolutely fantastically designed game, though. When you play it right, it feels the same way that like performing music live feels, which is funny because the game is not strictly speaking a music game,
like a rhythm platformer,
but it does have like a real rhythm to the platform that to me almost makes it more authentic, because it's not like you're, you know, hitting these buttons because of the music. It just so happens that the way you're hitting the buttons makes music. It's a very cool concept. To me, this is like the most absolute must play of all the Donkey Kong games, which makes it a little tragic that it's available for the GameCube in its original publication in late 2004, early 2005. It was re-released on the Wii under the
New Play Control
series. You know, when they took some older GameCube games and like repurposed them to have Wiimote compatibility. And the cool thing about that is that I believe for the New Play Control version of Donkey Kong Jungle Beat, you can still use your bongos if you have a Wii that supports GameCube controllers. You know, some of the later models didn't, but still fantastic way to experience the game. They added a few new things for that version of the game, which is also very cool. The new content does stand out a little bit, but you know, that's all right. It's still good content. That is released in late 2008, early 2009. So moving from there, of course, we could talk a little bit about Barrel Blast, but I'm not really a fan. I don't believe you can play using the bongos, which to me is kind of lame. When they moved it over to the Wii, basically they replaced the bongo controls with Wiimote and nunchuck motion controls. The problem with that to me is that the nunchuck is just not that accurate. For some things, I found it was okay. The occasional like shield bash in Zelda or something, it worked for me okay. But something that was like continued use, it just did not work for me. And as a result, I have very little experience with Barrel Blast because I played it like twice and it was like, this is a mess. I am not enjoying it. It doesn't, like, the controls hardly even work. I'm out. What about you, Slaggy?
Yeah, I never even bothered with it. I heard how much of a mess it was from most people, and I was just like, no, I'm not going to waste my time.
that's like really unfortunate, but also I understand it. So then let's talk a little bit. Let's just knock out the Wii era real quick and talk about Donkey Kong Country Returns.
Donkey Kong Crunchy.
Donkey Kong Country Returns. This is a side-scrolling platformer developed by Retro Studios of Metroid fame.
Yeah.
Released in 2010, pretty much worldwide, actually, which is awesome. It had a 3D port of the game for the 3DS that has new levels and stuff, very similar to the Jungle Beat situation, actually. This is basically a Wii-era remake of Donkey Kong Country, but not a remake per se, because they're not remaking the exact same content. It's just, it's really like a sequel or a revival of the series. Except to me, the level design is much tighter than it had ever been in the days of actual Donkey Kong Country. Really ingenious level designs. A beautiful game, even considering like LOL Wii U resolution or Wii resolution or whatever. It's a very fun game. One of the tightest 2D platforming experiences I've had in decades. So I'm a huge fan of Donkey Kong Country Returns. Slaggy, what have your Donkey Kong Country Returns experience?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's really solid. I've spent more time with Tropical Freeze, but, I think that, Retro really knows how to make a good game. So I definitely think their improvements upon, the original Donkey Kong Country, while still, they still feel like Donkey Kong Country games. So,
Yeah. To me, it's like Donkey Kong Country, but better. So let's also talk about Tropical Freeze real quick, because, it's a very similar game.
It's in the era of Game Buoy. We talked about it.
Except it is in the era of Game Buoy, so we won't talk about it too much. Released in early 2014 worldwide. It is a direct sequel to Donkey Kong Country Returns. Obviously, it's there in the name. Something that's interesting, though, is that, this game actually added additional playable characters, including Dixie Kong and Cranky Kong, who have different abilities. Cranky Kong, specifically, as I recall, has a pogo stick, like DuckTales style. So, that's, I think, really something that's very cool, really mixes up the game design. It's something that I really enjoy about both Donkey Kong Country Returns games, specifically, is the way that the level designs are very organic. You'll often find, like, hidden trinkets and things in areas that the game is, by its design, like, very careful not to place things in places that are, like, unfair to the player. Like, if you're being really good about really exploring, and like you see like some coins that lead to like a wall, like, okay, that wall probably has something interactive you can do with it, which I think is just really good game design. So
yeah,
I'm a big fan. I also think this game is effing gorgeous. I love the aesthetic of Tropical Freeze. So overall, I'm a huge fan. It can still be found in stores for a pretty reasonable price. I think it's absolutely worth playing if you have a Wii U.
Indeed.
Was also made available on the Nintendo Selects line of reprints as of just this past March, so definitely something you could get into. Won awards, in fact, Game Trailer's Best Platformer of 2014, so...
Wow.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of the Donkey Kong Country Returns games. Definitely think that they are also must-plays, so hopefully you give them a try and get something out of it. So I want to wrap this up by sort of hitting a handful of titles that just don't have a whole lot of place in our discussion otherwise. And the first is going to be the Mario vs. Donkey Kong series. We talked about these games when we did Mario Buoy to some degree, so yeah. I don't want to focus on them that much.
Well, especially since like a lot of them kind of focus more on the Marios and the minis now.
Well, exactly. While it is Mario versus Donkey Kong there in the name, the real focus is on Mario and the minis and that sort of lemmings puzzling gameplay style.
And it's just interesting that it really started out as basically a evolution of the
Mario 94
Donkey Kong 94.
See, the game is so Mario, I called it Mario.
And now we basically think about it as just the minis.
Yeah. Now we think about it as the minis. Donkey Kong isn't even in the name of the game anymore. It's Mini Mario and Friends. So, the first game in that series is the one that I do want to talk about a little bit. It is Mario versus Donkey Kong. It is a Game Boy Advance game, and it's very much a direct sequel to Donkey Kong 94. So in terms of the gameplay of old Donkey Kong and Donkey Kong 94, I think Mario versus Donkey Kong is probably the last game of that style to really exist. It sort of moves things along in terms of like the platform. platform puzzle gameplay before things just went into, you know, the Minis style Lemmings clone puzzle gameplay. So, you know, that is it to me. It's a really great game. It is available as a Wii U Virtual Console release in Japan, Europe, and Australia, not yet in North America, unfortunately. But if you have a Ambassador Program era 3DS, it is available in the Ambassador Program, so you can play this content. I'm a big fan of this game. I think the actual puzzle design is superb. I highly recommend people check it out. Slaggy, it has some elements from Doki Doki Panic.
Yeah.
So you I know you're a fan of all that, so I definitely recommend checking this one out. That's really all we're going to talk about Mario versus Donkey Kong, though. Like I said, we've talked about these games individually already. If you want to check that out, just listen to when we talked about them when we were doing our Ninty 90s and specifically talking about Mario.
Yep.
I also, of course, want to bring up Donkey Kong Jr. Math. This was an edutainment game for the NES. It was designed by Nintendo Research and Development 2, released in 1983 and 1986 in Japan, North America, and EU, respectively. It was available in the Animal Crossing release on GameCube, was available on the Wii's Virtual Console, and is currently available on the Wii U Virtual Console.
Oh, is it really?
Yes, it is.
That's funny. We should make our friends with babies learn math with Donkey Kong Jr. Math.
Yes. Basically, the game takes sort of the Donkey Kong Jr. style gameplay and augments the gameplay to include, like, basic math. So, it's, I'll be honest, I don't think it's a particularly good game. Like,
Donkey Kong, completely panned.
Donkey Kong will give you, like, a positive or negative integer, and you'll have to, like, grab numbers from your side of the screen, and it is two-player competitive. You'll have to, like, grab numbers and, like, you know, mathematical symbols.
Right.
In order to create an equation that will end in the correct integer. It's pretty silly, but, like, looking back at it, it's the kind of thing that, like, in that way that I really like trash art, I still really like this game, even though I recognize it is trash. Like, it's abysmal.
And I have to say, I mean, like, all things considered, like, here, if you try to make this number, like, problem-solving skills-wise, it's pretty good for children.
Yeah, I could see that, but I just don't think it's a particularly good game. So, and I also want to mention the game Donkey Kong King of Swing, or, as it's known in Japan, Bura Bura Donkey. This was a Game Boy Advance
called, like, Donkey Kong Clue Clue Land.
Well, so yes, it's a Game Boy Advance game that plays very, very similar to the NES classic Clue Clue Land. I'm not a huge fan of Clue Clue Land. Donkey Kong...
Oh, is that why you said King classic?
Yes. Donkey Kong King of Swing is a little more fun, at least. It has a particular aesthetic which it adheres to, which is, you know, they put some work into trying to make it work. It's sort of momentum-based, which I do like, but I think it's
just
a little
shoulder buttons, right?
It does, yeah. And it's just a little silly, though. It's like they did something new with the game while also keeping, you know, the design elements we're familiar with Donkey Kong. And that part is cool, but I can't in 2016 really encourage anyone to play Donkey Kong King of Swing, even though when it released in 2005, I was feeling it. That's really the conflicted feeling I have. Like, I enjoyed it at the time, but I don't think I will ever play it again or have the urge to play it again.
I mean, for what it's worth, that was around the time I met you, and I don't really remember you talking about it that much, so.
Yeah, probably just like, oh, I got it, it's okay. There was also, though, a sequel to it, and this is DK Jungle Climber, also made by the same folks at Paeon Studio, and this was a DS game released in 2007. It is currently available on the Wii U Virtual Console if you'd like to play it. It's basically the same game. It just uses the DS's dual screens in order to have more of like a vertical orientation of your game playing field by being like two screens tall, which is interesting, but it's, you know, the gameplay is very similar, and it's just not gameplay that I really love. I haven't downloaded this on Virtual Console. I might, now that we've talked about it. I'm feeling slightly nostalgic, but I also know that would be a waste of my money, and I will come to regret it. So,
yeah.
Again, I'm conflicted about these games.
I gotta say, you know, Paeon also was Barrel Blast. They kind of,
That's.
And I didn't realize, apparently, Paeon was former Data East people.
Now, that I did not know about Payon, so that's cool.
I guess their experiences with Payon didn't really pay off.
Wah, wah, wah. You tried it, man. So, all right. Well, with all of that having been said, I'm about ready to stop talking about Donkey Kong. I feel like we're running really long. I'm a big fan of Donkey Kong, though. For me, the Donkey Kong essentials, probably the original game, Donkey Kong Country Returns, and Donkey Kong Jungle Beat. What about you, Slaggy?
Yeah, I mean, I would say, you know, the original Donkey Kong, Donkey Kong 94.
Oh, yeah, Donkey Kong 94, absolutely. Available on 3DS Virtual Console.
Yeah, Donkey Konga.
Donkey Konga, oh, yeah. I wish that were easily available in some way. I still have consoles hooked up to play it. I have two sets of Kongas if you ever want to play. If anyone's listening to this, you want to come over and play, come on over.
Careful, you might have some international airfare you might have to help with.
I didn't say all expenses paid, girl. That tickled your funny bone. All right, well then, let's wrap this one up. Donkey Kong, happy birthday. Let's hope for another 35.
I was going to say, oh, he's getting to be an old man, but...
Don't you dare.
There are other people who I know who were born in 1981, along with Donkey Kong, and...
You better stop.
They are very youthful, so...
Well,
Donkey Kong, living in those flirty 30s. No, but really, I think an essential... And even if he does get a little overshadowed by Mario, deserves his time in the spotlight.
Absolutely. And, you know, it goes without saying, Donkey Kong remains a playable character in Smash Brothers, a lot of the Mario Party games, various Mario Sports games, including Mario Kart. So there's still a lot of Donkey Kong.
It's nice that Donkey Kong doesn't hold his grandfather's grudge against Mario.
You and lore, like Donkey Kong lore.
Okay, but can we also talk about how Cranky Kong is, like, super meta, too?
No, Cranky Kong is super meta, and that's something I will give Rare that they really brought to that take on Donkey Kong. Like, there are so many little cute touches with regard to the Donkey Kong Country world that really, to me, make the games stand out. It's just unfortunate that I'm not a big fan of them as games.
Yeah, I feel that.
Well, then let's move forward, because we do have a rumor this week.
Rumor has it.
This rumor comes from a fairly reliable source, and that is, in fact, a survey distributed by Microsoft Game Studios regarding future Killer Instinct characters. So, you know, there are some really interesting pieces on this survey. Basically, Microsoft Game Studios and Iron Galaxy are trying to figure out what characters gamers want to see in the next season of Killer Instinct content. And, you know, you have some stuff about characters in the game already, but, like... that take place before the events of the game. So, like, a pre-transformation Cinder, or a Shadow take on Bee Orchid, or, like, a Broccoli Man version of Aganos. But, you know, they also have some original characters, like, generically, a Magic Archer, a Wendigo, a Lovecraftian Fighter,
Wendigo,
a Djinn, Thunder's younger brother Eagle, and Idol, the two-headed boss from the original game, which I actually was playable in the original game through, like, a button combination. I used to play him in the arcade all the time. He was super cheesy. I should have known better. But, you know, they also had listed, like, Joanna Dark from Perfect Dark, Brute from the Halo franchise, the Agent from Crackdown, even. So, technically, the idea that these things are under consideration, not confirmed, but the fact that they're all here on this survey definitely gives you a good reason to think we'll see one or more of these popping up next season.
That's awesome.
Excellent. All right, well, if you don't have anything else, it's time to start winding down by talking about what's up.
I said, hey, what's going on?
This week, I've been playing a lot of Pokemon Go, I've been playing a lot of World of Warcraft, and I played some Civ 5.
Oh, that did happen.
Yeah. My boyfriend Xander, who's been on this show, he has never played a Civ game really. Like, I guess he had some time with Civ 3, but every time Slagkick and I talk about Civ 5, he's just sort of like, doesn't know what we're talking about, doesn't play those kinds of games. During the Steam sale, though, Civ 5 with all expansions was down to like $12.50. Slagkick and I were talking about playing a game, and so he was just like, you know what, I'm gonna download it, I'll play with you guys. He ended up getting into it, and we had two nights in a row of playing from like 9 p.m. to like 4 a.m.
Mm-hmm. That's how Civ do it.
Which is how Civ do it.
And I like to point out, for those who don't follow me on my Twitter feed, or Spike on his Twitter feed, on the first night, Spike was like, oh, I'm going to teach. I mean, we're going to do this, how to teach him how to play. And basically what happened is that I had a worker who was captured by barbarians, and you know, when you return a barbarian, even though somebody claims that they didn't see this option on the screen, you're able to either keep it for yourself or return it. It was
No, you misunderstand. I saw the option. I didn't see that it was your worker.
Oh, well, still, I mean,
I thought I was taking a worker from a city state.
Okay, even though I had said, oh yay, I'm finally able to go get my worker.
I don't always pay attention to the in-game chat. How many times have you said something in it and I didn't respond for literally 20 turns?
So basically, you took my you took my worker. Captain Spike took my worker. I basically accused him of, you know, forcing my workers into labor and being a tyrant, and so he decided to retaliate by invading.
Yeah, so I took over one of his cities. I didn't actually take it over, though, because I was just fighting him out of spite. I didn't need that land or that city, so I just raised it after that.
Yeah, and then you went and settled a city right near it.
So the reason I settled a new city near it is because you had then tried to establish a new city.
I tried to rebuild my city.
I don't want you to have this space, so I took it. I took it, and then I bought the tiles around your city so it couldn't expand in that direction.
Yeah, the people of Glamazon were terrified.
Sorry about it. So, Civ is a lot of fun.
These are the types of emergent... This is what is so fun, is the emergent gameplay that comes out of Civ games like this.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I'm really excited for Civ 6, but I'm still hoping to have at least one more, like, epic Civ weekend before Civ 6.
Like, Labor Day weekend, probably.
Probably Labor Day weekend.
Because, like, we won't be in PAX or whatever.
We won't be at PAX, we'll be here. So, yeah, if any of our listeners want to get in on that, please reach out to us, and we'll see what we can work out.
Big 16...
You wouldn't be able to play on your Surface because it would crash, but
that's true.
But I would be happy to do like a 16 player Civ game. I've never done that.
Yeah.
It might be time.
Yeah, we'll talk about that.
All right. What about you, Slaggy? Anything else you've been playing?
No, Pokemon Go. I'm not quite as far as you are because I had a lot of downtime when I was trying to play and didn't really do the evening stuff that you've done. Playing a lot of WoW. I've been working on my Paladin and my Warlock, so they're both 100. Having a lot of fun and really eager to play a Demon Hunter. I've already played with the Wowhead tool that's like the model viewer that you can like basically do the character customization. So I've got it like all planned out. It's sick and twisted.
Well, and you know, so they do say that we will have our early access period for Legion pre-orders a week or two, or at least 2 weeks prior the launch.
I know. I'm hoping that it's more
Legion
than 2 weeks.
At the end of August. That's August 30th in particular. So, you know, that's going to be really exciting, of course. I'm also, you know, really enjoying my WoW time. But what I want to do is we only have about 20 minutes left in this episode, Slaggy. I wanted to get it done in less, but I do want to take a moment to talk about Pokemon Go, because we have to talk about Pokemon Go.
Oh, yeah.
This thing is a cultural phenomenon at this point, practically. You know, I mentioned I was at a party last night. It was a birthday party for
Seawolf Jason.
Former guest Seawolf Jason, who will probably be back on here sometime soon. It was his birthday. His whole family was there. Lots of friends. I don't think there was anyone there that didn't have Pokemon Go other than one of the elder adults that didn't have a phone that would support it. And she wanted it. She checked the iOS store and then found out her her device couldn't run it.
That's a bummer.
So
time to upgrade.
You know, like Seawolf Jason's older sister, whom I've known for almost 20 years, actually more than 20 years at this point. I have literally never seen her play a video game. She has more Pokemon than I do.
Mm-hmm.
So this thing is just crazy with regard to the penetration it has in with regard to the audience and engagement and getting people to play. You know, my boyfriend and I, we've been doing things like taking nighttime trips to local colleges and roaming around at night for a couple hours to catch Pokemon. We've met up with other people and made new friends this way. It's been insane.
And you're hearing stories about this like all over.
Of course, the flip side, you know, there are stories. I guess in Chicago this weekend, there was an armed gang that set up a Pokestop lore, you know, where, you know, you'll get like special Pokemon to show up that are less common, and like the Pokestop will give you more goods than a normal Pokestop. And, you know, they're usually really fun meetup experiences, but a gang, armed gang, used one in order to trick people into coming over and being mugged for their phones.
That's terrifying.
Which is awful. You know, the flip side, of course, is it happened in Chicago. The crime rates in Chicago are fairly high. It happened at night, and obviously you have to make good choices at night. Like, you have to be careful. So, you know, but be aware, people are leveraging this. They are making bad choices. I think it's almost inevitable we'll have a Pokemon Go discussion. I know we've done Pokemon episodes before, but I feel like Go at this point is going to be huge. We don't have any hard numbers. The game's not even out everywhere in the world yet, but once it is, I think we will be doing a discussion on
I imagine so. Might even bring Rob Roberts in. He's a huge Ingress player. So,
And, you know, Niantic, who made Ingress, also made this. There are some connections between Pokemon Go and Ingress, and I think Rob Roberts would be the ideal guest for that. I was just talking with him earlier today about a GamerX panel, because we want to try and do something a little different this year. And one of his ideas was talking about sort of augmented reality games as like an LGBT gamer. I don't know if we'll go in that direction, but that's already the level that like Pokemon Go is inspiring.
Yeah. So. I'm salty that they haven't made it like a Pokemon Go exclusive Pokemon named Niantic, like a little cat that's also a tick or something.
Niantic. I would be so into that, a little cat tick.
Yeah, but I mean, I know it's not perfect. The servers have obviously been suffering, but I mean, I think that like the potential for what this means is huge. I mean, getting people out there, like I've read articles or like, you know, little posts, things on Tumblr about like people saying like, you know, I suffer from depression. Pokemon Go motivates me to go out and get some fresh air, and like, you know, it really improves my mental health. People, you know, making new friends. There was that cool story about a teenage girl who was Pokemon hunting and helped find I think it was just like an accident, not like a murder or anything, but she found a dead body, and so, you know, she helped the police, you know, find a missing body. So that's a future Officer Jenny, you know, in the training.
Yeah, it's gonna be interesting. You know, I can't really fault stuff like that on Pokemon Go. It's just the reality we live in is as we have these.
I don't think the person died playing Pokemon Go.
Oh no, I agree. I'm just saying, you know, as we move forward, we have more augmented reality experiences, more games that get people out of their house, which I think is a good thing. You know, we're gonna hear these stories necessarily. So
yeah,
it's interesting. Sharing any of these stories like to like be negative on Pokemon Go. I'm a huge fan. I know some people feel the game is the gameplay is downgraded from the full games, but for me it's a different experience. Mm-hmm. One that's focused on the social and collecting aspects, and those are actually my favorite parts of Pokemon, I'm finding out.
Yeah,
so
our friend Amanda, who was on the Game Buoy Party Games Games Party episode, she just messaged us with an article about on Kotaku. Apparently Guy Blomberg, who is from PAX Australia, organized a Pokemon Go walk in Sydney, Australia. 2,000 people showed up.
Wow.
And I'm just scrolling through, and like some of them look like super hot dudes. So I'm just saying, like, you know, not to be that person, but I'm like, maybe I'll meet a husband playing Pokemon Go. You never know.
Why not? You know, go to one of the game nights at the Eagle in San Francisco, and you know, Pokemon it up. Start chatting them up about Psyducks and stuff.
And she also linked us an amazing GIF of Drake from the Hot Blind Bling video with a Ash Ketchum hat throwing Pokeballs.
All right. Well, we need to start wrapping this up. Do you have some social links for us this week?
I do. So first, I want to start out with our question of the week, which is, this week we celebrate 35 years of Donkey Kong. What are your favorite games involving Nintendo's Great Ape? Your Enzyme says, that's too easy. DKC 1 through 3, especially 2. I love those games and still play them to this day. Wasn't a fan of the Wii/Wii U ones.
Interesting.
So interesting, yeah. And also interesting is that Act Death says, Donkey Kong Country 2, the best. But Donkey Kong for the Game Boy is also really great and a precursor to Mario versus Donkey Kong.
And, you know, I have to say, of the Donkey Kong Country games, my favorite is 2. I may have said that earlier, but in case I didn't, I do think 2 is the strongest of those games.
Yeah, it's just interesting to see, like, oh, wow, that's a huge fan base for that one in particular. I mean, I think people really like Diddy, you know, Diddy and Dixie. I like playing as Diddy and Dixie. I think that was probably my favorite, too. So, in terms of our Mighty No. 9 episode, we had that retro code saying, I cannot wait to hear this about our episode. I wonder if this will be 2016's most decisive game. Definitely 2016's divisive game. We also got a tweet from Your Enzyme saying, fantastic Mighty No. 9 conversation on the latest GameBuie.org podcast. Thank you very much. Monarch Piratica says, thanks to GameBuie.org for telling me about the Berserk Musou game. Now I want it.
All right. And you know, the new Berserk anime started last week, so need to watch it.
And Atari Barbie of the late great Koopa Club says, I want.
Yeah. I think it's going to be great. I really think it's going to be just a fantastic, you know, Berserk is just such a great franchise to do a Musou on. I was so excited.
And we have Your Enzyme said a couple days ago, I beat Inside today and that was a trip. It's only around 3 hours, but oh, so worth it. He also said, what team do I join for Pokemon Go? This is the most important question I've ever asked. So we are Team Instinct.
GameBuie.org is Team Yellow. We go Team Instinct. Yellow.
Yeah, so if you're undecided, you want to be spreading Team Yellow's success around the world or whatever, join Team Instinct.
Indeed.
And with that, we love your feedback.
We do. We love your feedback. We like your Facebook likes. We effing love Twitter.
We like reviews, ratings, and comments on iTunes, Stitcher
also
Radio.
Subscriptions, hello.
And subscriptions, yes. On iTunes, Stitcher Radio, and Google Play.
Indeed. Of course, you can check us out at our home base at GameBuie.org.
GameBuie.org.
And you can email us over at MailBuie@GameBuie.org. With all that having been said, of course, I do have some shout-outs here. First up, I need to point you in the direction of the Voice of Geeks Network. You can find that over at VogNetwork.com. You can find us, as well as other incredible shows. Oh, man, that's arrogant. That makes us sound incredible. We are not incredible. Sorry, guys. Shows that are incredible. Girls Gone Wow, where you can get a female perspective on the world's most popular MMO. Orange Lounge Radio, where every gamer has a voice and from whom I steal so many of my cues. Ranger Pridecast, the show that I personally do with Shane Olenko, talking about the current season of the Power Rangers meta series, as well as the Japanese Super Sentai series, upon which it's based. The Starboard Power Coupling Podcast, a Star Trek podcast you hope doesn't fail, and many more. I'd also like to point you in the direction of such awesome non-VOG shows as the Nintendo Love Fest, which does exactly what it says on the tin, as well as X Nation, their sister show, and an awesome podcast focusing on Marvel's Mighty Mutants. I'd be remiss not to mention Tables, Ladders, and Podcast, the currently on hiatus professional wrestling podcast for the common man. And last but certainly not least, Slagkicks Endeavor.
It's really not.
Y'all get shady, but Reading is Fundamental is a great show. Slagkick puts it on, featuring myself, Rob Roberts from Orange Lounge Radio, and Delvin from VG Realness. We all sort of take off our shoes, get a little catty, have a lot of fun talking about the current season of RuPaul's Drag Race. And since we'll have a season starting, in like a month and a half now?
Yeah, I guess we're so.
We're going to be coming back soon. What about you, Slag? You want to take us a place?
Game Bar is the gay video game Prairie Home Companion and part of the Hunty Bunch, along with VG Realness. That's Video Game Realness, serving up a weekly dose of gaming chit-chat among friends. La Palanca Podcast por y para gay gamers latino-americanos en español. The Joystick Jockeys, two LGBTQ gamers, DJ and Ruben, who love games and love talking about them, and our LGBTQ QTs. And then our allies over at the Nintendo Fun Club, your place for platformers, positivity, and pop punk. Also, we have DSZ Podcast, which is GameBuie superfans Dan and Crystal, who level up their game development skills and discuss the daily grind along the way on the non-daily schedule, and who I feel like I might need to go over to their house right now because they just made churros with vanilla bean ice cream. And that looks so good. And I also want to shout out to our sister ship, our sister show, Anime Buoy, which is your port of call for anime recommendations, news, bits, and discussions that maybe aren't on your radar, but most definitely should be. If that sounds familiar, it's because it is a Buoy show.
Indeed.
Our wonderful theme music was done by Zelda Reorchestrated, the project that aimed to reorchestrate beautiful Zelda music into gorgeous symphonic sounds. They closed their doors quite a while back. We'll forever be pouring a 40 into the great fairy fountain.
All right, we were both clearly at a party way too late last night. We have
You try saying pouring a 40 into the great fairy fountain. That's a lot of alliteration.
Pouring a 40 into the great fairy fountain. So,
well, F you.
All right, guys. I've had a great time talking to all y'all out there in Internet Radio Land today. Thank you so much for being here. I hope you've had half as much fun listening as we've had recording. Until next time, though, keep gaming.
Keep gaming.
Keep thinking.
Keep thinking. Man.
And DK, he's a hell of an ape.
His coconut gun can fire in spurts. It's dirty.
Talking to your mic?
I'm gonna keep my baby.
All right, that was good. I mean, it didn't sound good, but it was
all
right for the mic.
Fuck you.